Buying a house used to be a rite of passage for any adult. You go to college, you get a job, you get a house, and you settle down. And that used to be the trajectory of life for most people back in the day. But with mortgage interest rate at over 7%, many can't afford to purchase a home and they end up renting. Home ownership has become an elusive goal to achieve. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be exploring the rising cost of rent and its implications on home ownership dreams. The cost of rent has been on a relentless climb, outpacing wage growth in many areas. This trend is especially concerning for younger individuals and families as it significantly impacts their ability to save for a home. As a result, many young people find themselves caught in a cycle where a significant portion of their income goes towards rent, leaving little room for savings. This makes the prospect of home ownership seem like a distant dream. When you rent, you're essentially paying for someone else's investment. Home ownership allows you to build equity, which is a crucial asset for future financial stability, retirement, and generational wealth. Building equity involves the gradual increase in the value of your home over time, essentially as you pay down your mortgage. This becomes a form of savings that can be tapped into for various purposes, such as funding education, starting a business, or ensuring a comfortable retirement. It is a way to transform the monthly cost of housing into a long-term investment. But the inability to participate in this equity-building process can create disparities that echo through the generations. This current trend could potentially create a divide in wealth accumulation amongst different demographics. Unfortunately for buyers, home prices have continued to rise in 2023, with the median existing home price at $413,000, which is a year-over-year increase of 3.4%. Now, a common rule of thumb is the 28-36 rule, which says that a home is affordable when your housing expenses, which include mortgage, taxes, and insurance payments, don't exceed 28% of your gross monthly income. Your total debt, including your mortgage, other loans, and credit cards, shouldn't be more than 36% of your gross monthly income as well. Home ownership rates for young adults dropped from 45% in 1990 to 41.6% in 2021. The number of first-time home buyers declined to just 26% in 2022, which is the lowest level since the National Association of Realtors began tracking data. This represents a significant drop from 34% 1 year earlier. Rising mortgage interest rates haven't helped either, jumping from around 3% during the pandemic to around 7% currently. Home buyers on a $3,000 monthly mortgage payment budget have lost $30,000 in purchasing power since 2023 due to inflation. Millennials are the largest generation in the U.S. and also the most unique in that they do not value home ownership. Two-thirds of them say that it's a central part of the American dream, but it's been a struggle for many aspiring millennials to buy a home. These mid-20s to early 40-somethings face a tough market. There's low inventory, high inflation, and expensive financing. And this combination has created an affordability squeeze that is forcing many millennials to keep on renting. In addition to being held back by financial considerations, many millennials are in a general pattern of reaching life milestones later. The average age for getting married has been rising. Subsequently, millennials are starting their families later too, so they're waiting to buy homes. Meanwhile, 24% of Gen Z and 11% of millennials are living rent-free with their parents or friends. White households tend to have the highest rates of home ownership in the U.S. at 74.4%, followed by Asians at 61%, and then Hispanics at 48.6%. And now today, we're joined by real estate economist Ken Johnson.
Glad to be here.
Now, Ken, with the rising rent prices, what challenges do individuals and families face in terms of housing affordability?
So, in recent years, rents have been rising in the U.S. and in general around the world. And what's been happening is that family formation has finally hit its new stride, if you will. So we have a number of people that are forming those households for the very first time. So family or household formation, it's not just the birth rate, but it's also family formation, household formation, and people migrating to different parts of the world. So we're having a misalignment of, at present, a misalignment of the demand for housing and the supply of housing in particular parts of the country in the U.S. So we're seeing rents become, relatively speaking, unaffordable with respect to income. More demand in a given area is driving up the demand is outstripping the supply, which is driving up the price. It takes some amount of time to develop units to live in and own, to live in and rent. So you just can't flip a switch and create the supply that's necessary. Interestingly, the rents on average in the U.S. have been trending downward the last few months.
So now with the rising trend towards urbanization and changing lifestyles, how has renting become the preferred choice for some individuals or families?
Sure. So there's a couple of things going on. Housing is really a good that has three aspects to it. It's a necessary good. We all need shelter. So, but taking that aside, we still have two other aspects of housing that most people don't think about. It's both consumption and investment. So how you answer this question depends on the trade-off between consumption and investment. From a strict investment standpoint, I've been part of research that shows that on average, renting and reinvesting those monies that would be otherwise put into home ownership actually produces greater wealth on average than home ownership and building equity. Very interestingly, though, the difference is very small. So you have to ask yourself, what is it that you want to do? And then you have to make sure if you do rent and reinvest, that you do that monastically, that this is a commitment. This is an investment to you. If you end up renting and not reinvesting, that is the third choice, which is by far the worst of the three choices, and it is actually wealth destroying.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of renting as opposed to buying a home?
Sure. So some of the advantages to renting is you can be more upwardly mobile. It is far easier to get out of a lease and move from Miami, Florida to New York City to take advantage of a job offer than it is to sell your home in Miami and then move to New York and either rent or repurchase. And there's some reasons, but there's some tax reasons why you want to repurchase. So generally speaking, in the U.S., what we see is once you transition to home ownership, you usually don't transition back, although that's starting to be broken some. But one of the big advantages to renting is that you can pursue those professional goals a little bit easier because it's easier to move from Miami to L.A., L.A. to Chicago, etc.
Thank you so much, Ken, but please stick around. Ken Johnson will stay with us right after the break. And when we come back, who is to blame for the rising cost of rent? We'll have more after the break. While housing prices are hitting higher, rent is also getting more expensive. Since the pandemic, rent has increased 29.4% overall. For single-family homes, the increases have been much higher at 35% compared to multifamily homes at 23%. Typical asking rents in the U.S. are now at $1,982 on average, representing a 3.3% increase compared to the same time last year. Rent has been increasing since 2020 from a variety of factors, including inflation, lack of inventory, and a shifting workforce. As the pandemic increased opportunity for remote work, renters sought larger homes in areas that had previously been inaccessible and relatively low cost. This migration increased rents in the suburban areas more than it lowered them in urban areas, yielding a net increase in rents. Renters are also increasingly looking for studio and one-bedroom apartments, driving up demand for available housing. Prospective home buyers are also remaining renters for longer as they face high demand and low inventory of existing homes and rising mortgage rates. Generally, households should be spending no more than 30% of their gross income on rent. That means if a household earns the U.S. median income of $70,784 annually, or $5,899 per month, the goal would be to spend no more than $1,770 per month on rent. And while owning your own home is considered the American dream, Romania actually tops the list with 96% of households owning their own home. This results from a mix of tradition opportunities and housing affordability, followed by China and Vietnam at 90% and Russia at 87%. Meanwhile, countries that have the lowest homeownership rates include Switzerland at 42.2%, Germany at 49.1%, and Austria at 54.2%. For these countries, affordability also plays a major part, but social housing is also widespread in these countries. So for this and more, let's bring in again real estate economist Ken Johnson. How do individuals weigh the decision to rent versus buying a home?
Well, okay. Yeah, I took the question the other way when you first said it there. So what should be on that list? They should be asking themselves things along. I'll go from both the consumption side and then I'll go over to the finance side. It's a financial asset side. From a consumption side, you need to ask yourself, are you happy with your location there? Are you happy with a few less amenities? You know, because that's what you're getting when you rent. You take the standard package, so to speak. You get what you get. Some other advantages are, hey, I'm personally, this is true of me, I'm horrible working with my hands. And when you own a home, you have to consistently be maintaining that home, and you're either paying for it or you're doing it yourself. So you have to ask yourself those questions. Are you ready to actually do a lot of this yourself or commit to the financial commitment to making these repairs and upgrades? When you're renting, you don't have to worry about that. That's consumption side. Now, on the investment side, you know, again, you get to move. If you're a renter, you get to more easily relocate for that bigger, better job offer, right? So, but on the consumption side, again, you're just giving up making your own meal. We all like our own cooking. So the renting side from a consumption standpoint is sometimes a little bit preferred because people aren't as in love with the amenities. And then they like the trade where they can make, oh my gosh, I can pursue a career a little bit easier. So what you tend to see is a bifurcation in the age groups. For example, young, upwardly mobile people are more interested in renting today than perhaps ever before. And as you become a little bit more seasoned like myself, then we tend to think, well, homeownership, I'm kind of at the peak of my career, or I'm getting there. I don't need to move around the country. I'm happy where I am. My family grew up here. So you see generations that are a little bit older, they're more happy with homeownership, and generations that are a little bit younger are more interested in renting. But the differences are small. And again, I would just encourage anybody that's out there, remember, you can either own and build equity. You could rent and not reinvest those monies that you would otherwise put into home ownership. Or you could rent and reinvest those monies that you would otherwise put into home ownership. The number one and number three produce nearly similar results in terms of wealth creation over time. But not, like I said, they're not dramatically different. So, but if you are going to rent, you absolutely have to make sure that, and that you're committed to making those investments. If you're not, you need to own the home because it will force you to save.
How do attitudes towards renting versus buying vary among different generations, such as the millennials versus the Gen Zs and the baby boomers?
So we already touched on that a little bit. As you get a little younger, folks in the U.S. today, and I believe around most of the world, they're a little bit less connected to feel that necessity to own a home. One of the reasons for this, too, is the investment opportunities for those that are coming along at this point in time, they're just entering their professional careers. there are more investment opportunities, stocks, bonds, all sorts of financial alternatives that they can invest in and save for retirement. Going back only a few years, there was far fewer opportunities that you could invest in, financial opportunities that you could invest in as the individual. And therefore, home ownership was very popular because it did go up in value on average. So it was seen, that's how housing became a financial asset as well as a consumption good. So, you know, how did we get here? A little bit over preference, a little bit over the fact that there's more options, and the fact also, again, people realize when they're younger, maybe we want to be a little bit more mobile. And our age groups are we see our biggest generation will pretty soon will be the Gen Zs. I get the generations mixed up, but some of the younger generations will start to outnumber everybody else. And so you might see in the U.S. a little bit more inclination to, you might see a little bit more inclination to be renting, but I don't think we're going to become a renter nation by that, where by that I mean more than 50% of households are renting as opposed to owning. That number might go down into 60 or the high 50s. It's not going to dramatically change in the next decade or so.
Are there generational shifts in preferences for long-term renting over home ownership?
Absolutely. And I think some of the generational shifts, that's something that we're not talking about, because you mentioned long-term renting. So something that we're beginning to see in the U.S. and in parts of Europe, to my understanding, is this concept of short-term renting, where you're not having these year-long leases. And the landlord is they're doing more than even the long-term leases. They're perhaps maintaining the utilities, doing a lot of the maintenance for you, providing other amenities. So you see these gig workers that are now very mobile, and it doesn't really matter. They can work from home, and maybe it's a passing fad, but at this point in time, there appears anecdotally to be a number of these gig worker types that are, well, wow, I want to be in Florida in the winter, and I want to move back to Michigan for the summer. So why do I want to take on a home ownership or a long-term lease? Because that stops me from doing it. It doesn't matter if I'm working in Miami in the wintertime in Ann Arbor in the summer. I can work anywhere. So I think that is becoming an alternative, instead, because we've only had really two until this point in time, where it was either you owned or you long-term rented. Short-term rentals are becoming a thing.
And are there some unique challenges faced by younger individuals in accumulating the necessary funds for a down payment?
I think many people will disagree with my answer on this. So you have to look at the timing of things. So where we are in the economic cycle, we are at a clearly unaffordable period in housing right now, but we've been there before. And then there's been more affordable periods. And they all correspond with when you're at the height of at the peak of a housing cycle, you're going to get a lot of unaffordable housing. When you're at the bottom of a housing cycle, the issue of affordability tends to go away. So it really is. So are we at a time that is unique and never happened before, where it's so unaffordable and very difficult to build up that down payment and all the money's necessary at closing? The answer to that is no. We've seen periods just as tough as this, where your income relative to cost were out of whack. We've been there before, but that's because we've been at the peaks of housing cycles before. So the one I'm thinking of is my generation coming out, where unemployment was double digit and interest rates were 17%. And the down payment was always very difficult to come up with because incomes were lower relative to pricing. There was all sorts of problems that was solved. Today, we're at the peak of the cycle. But if you compare this to just say 2012, when we were at the bottom of the housing cycle in the U.S., that wasn't that difficult to get into home ownership. It was one of the easier periods in time. So I guess my answer is qualifying. It just depends on what periods of time you're comparing this to. It's no more difficult today to get into home ownership than at the peaks of the housing cycle, say back in the early 80s, the late 80s, and today. Those were all relatively as difficult as today. But it's far more difficult today to get into home ownership than it was just, say, a decade ago.
For younger individuals entering the housing market, what challenges do they face in terms of affordability and competition?
So, a couple of things. It definitely, we're in a very unaffordable period right now. What's going on is both rents and prices have shot up in the last few years relative to our incomes. This has happened before. The way we tend to solve that historically around the world, because again, when you have prices shoot up, there'll be, that means that the demand is outstripping supply. So you decide to build more units. And so how quick can we build the units? That is an issue. So then you get this very, you get this period of unaffordable housing, both on the rent side and the home ownership side. And the way people have historically solved that is they start to move in with one another. The density, the average number of people living per unit actually increases. So I'm going to show my seasonality here, if you will. I'm up my age, if you will. So we used to watch sitcoms such as The Odd Couple, The Golden Girls. Those came from real life situations. And it's how people have historically dealt with unaffordable housing periods, a housing crunch on both rent and home ownership side. So you see multi-generational living, these odd roommate situations, alternative forms of housing will also become very popular. By that, I mean mobile homes, primarily modular housing. So, but we've been down this road before, and the way we will solve it this time will be the way we've solved it every time before. We will simply start to double up, if you will, not exactly double up, but more people living per unit. And you will probably have a lot of these odd roommate situations, and that passes with time because our incomes are starting to rise. Rent prices and home prices are flattening out. Rent prices, again, are actually moving down the last few months. They're not going to topple tremendously, but they will flatten out. And our incomes are rising as the economy grows. And we've all done this before. We just tend to forget about it. And it's like stubbing your toe. When you stub your toe, it's the worst thing in the world. Well, you've stubbed your toe before, but the moment you stub your toe, it's the worst thing in the world. It hurts like really bad. This is very difficult for us now. I admit that. That is very, very difficult. But we've been here before. And all we have to realize is that these things will solve themselves with housing. And primarily what drives that is it just takes a while to provide necessary housing. It takes a while to match the supply to the demand of housing because of the time it takes to build housing.
Thank you so much for your time today, Ken. While Airbnb has played an important role in the travel industry and allowed for the growth of a sharing economy, the so-called Airbnb effect is to some extent responsible for the rising cost of rent. Now, the Airbnb effect refers to the gentrification process in that it slowly increases the value of an area to the detriment of the indigenous residents, many of whom are pushed out due to financial constraints. Overtourism facilitated by platforms such as Airbnb negatively impacts house prices and communities. It encourages landlords to move out their properties out of long-term rentals and for sale markets and into the short-term rental markets. A study found that a 1% increase in Airbnb listings lead to a 0.018% increase in rents and a 0.026% increase in house prices. We are now looking at a future where home ownership might become a privilege rather than the norm, and this could have profound implications for wealth distribution, social mobility, and even the overall stability of communities. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.